Well, thank you, Governor. Thank you. Thank you all very much. Thank you for that warm Connecticut welcome. Thank you all. Thank you so much for that warm welcome. And Governor Rowland, thank you, sir. It's always nice to be introduced by a friend. They have to say something pleasant. He overdid it, but I'm so proud and pleased to be here at this great university. I want to thank the chairman, President Austin, too. Particularly pay my respects to my co-honorees, Beverly and Raymond Sackler, for whom I share the same respect that the University of Connecticut has shown them today, and to the faculty and to the parents here, and of most important of all, the class of 98. Thank you all very, very much. You know, over the course of my 35 years in public life, I've been fortunate to be invited to participate in a number of different graduation ceremonies, but there's one thing that never seems to change. You can never tell who's happier that this educational and enriching experience has come to a close, the students or the parents. And of course, as proud parents in our own right, we've been blessed to see five kids graduate from college, and so to the broke but happy parents here, let me say that Barbara and I feel your pain. I was reminded again of this week, well, just last weekend, as I watched the oldest of our grandsons graduate from Rice University in Texas, and there were plenty of smiles, maybe a few tears, and it struck me that perhaps more than any other day, there's something very special about graduation day, and it struck me like that days like today are days when the past intersects with the future, and there's also a wonderful day for family when the generations come together. And I was thinking about all these things when I sat at Rice University listening to Kurt Vonnegut deliver a wonderful graduation speech last Saturday, and then another thought occurred to me. It occurred to me that as a graduation speaker today, I should remember to do unto others as I would have them do unto me, and so I promised to be brief. I talked to Kristen about it. Her speech was so short that I now have additional time to develop a couple of themes that I know you'll be interested in. The Federal Reserve Board. The gold standard. And then I'll give you 15 minutes on why Dennis Rodman should never be Secretary of State. Now, I will be brief because I'm reminded of my favorite story told by Billy Graham, who's been just a wonderful inspiration in my life and in Barbara's life, a friend of ours. He told about the speaker standing where I am, and the guy went on. And on and on. And finally, at the head table over here, a guy picked off his shoe, heaved it at the speaker, missed him, hit a lady in the front row, and she said, "Hit me again, I can still hear him." So this year marks my 50, half a century since I graduated from college. And it's funny, I can't remember where I had lunch yesterday. But I do remember something from way back then. Remember it distinctly. The last baseball game of my college career back in June of 48. He played at Yale Field. It was reunion weekend. And for some reason, I'll never forget the sight of the 50-year reunion class that came parading into the ballpark. There they were, a bunch of helplessly old guys, rejoicing in seeing old friends, glad most of them to still be alive, and surely the class here, you don't reunion at commencement time, but class of 1898 is the same here at this school, I'm sure. A lot of goodwill that day as the members of the class of 1898 marched in, and some still had the spring in their step. But let's face it, I got to recognize it. They all looked old, and with good reason. Their generation had been through a lot. The class of 1898 graduated from UConn or from my school down the road. They watched in awe as the Wright brothers' first flight sputtered into the sky, and then a little later, Henry Ford gave us the automobile. And 20 years following graduation, they agonized over the war to end all wars. They saw World War I grind up their classmates. I think seven from the University of Connecticut gave the ultimate price in helping to defeat Germany's aggression. And 30 years removed from their graduation, they were seized and many destroyed by the Great Depression that rocked and socked our nation. And as the classes of 1898 celebrated their 40th reunion, they saw Hitler, unchecked, race through the lowlands, and free nation after free nation fell beneath the Nazi boot, while the U.S. and others stayed on the sidelines, no Americans to fight abroad, was the cry. And 45 years after they left college, they saw their sons and daughters fight in World War II, fight to end German fascism and Japanese imperialism. But as they came together for their 50th reunion, hopes had been lifted with the end of World War II and the founding of the United Nations. And still, as the class of 1898, began to fade from the scene, the dark shadows of the Cold War began to stretch across Europe. And before long, it would envelop Africa and Asia and Latin America, too. My class was 1948, and most of us here in my school, those who might have been that vintage here, served in World War II. Country came together with one purpose. We saw many classmates died. UConn lost 114 graduates during that war. And so together we saw the horrors of war. We felt the joys of victory. And we watched as our nation, in victory, embraced our former enemies and helped them nurture their new democracies. We lifted up Japan and we lifted up Germany and helped them go and remain democratic. We saw TV begin. Didn't have TV when I was a kid. I know that's hard for you. We had Buck Rogers and Wilma Deering. We had the Lone Ranger and Tonto, but we didn't have TV. We saw it begin with Ed Sullivan and Milton Berle and Lucy. And in time, there was 60 Minutes and All in the Family. But then later, we got Roseanne Barr and Jerry Springer. What a waste. What a trivialization of a media. We saw the Cold War intensify as Soviet tanks crushed the freedom fighters in Eastern Europe. And that monstrous obscenity, the Berlin Wall, divide a great country right down the middle. My class saw the threat of nuclear war as two superpowers faced each other down, and the communists said, "We will bury you," and our response was, "Freedom will prevail." And we witnessed two ghastly wars with unhappy endings, Korea and Vietnam. And again, UConn alumni answered the call to duty and paid the price, losing 10 in Korea, a couple of more, I believe the record shows, in Southeast Asia. And the latter conflict divided our country like nothing since the Civil War. And we lived blanketed with fear over nuclear fallout and superpower conflict. My predecessor, Ronald Reagan, came into office and rightly concluded that only a strong America, a strong NATO, could guarantee freedom. And I became president in 1989. And in 4 short years, your class, this class of 1998, saw perhaps the most monumental global changes in the history of this country. The Berlin Wall fell. Germany, against all predictions, was unified and remaining in the alliance in NATO. The Baltic states, all three of them gained their independence. The Warsaw Pact, totally collapsed. And the Soviet Empire imploded, and Eastern Europe was liberated. And with Gorbachev's cooperation, and incidentally, I know him well, and I believe Gorbachev will be treated very kindly by history, But with Gorbachev at my side, we convened the Madrid Peace Conference, where Arabs and Jews talked peace in one room, an unthinkable scenario for years. And that never would have happened without Desert Storm, without the 31 nations that came together to form a disparate but historic coalition in defeating a brutal aggressor on the sands of Kuwait. And thankfully, the outcome of the Gulf War was different from the Asian forays that preceded it, but the victory was won at great cost. And our casualties were light compared to other wars, but that didn't make it any easier to make a decision to send someone else's son or daughter into battle. I've never forgotten people like Yukon Sidi Bowden, a medical specialist who had her abdomen ripped apart by shrapnel and gave the last full measure of devotion. People like her give the phrase duty, honor, country true meaning, and certainly inspired me, and I believe inspired an entire nation. And gradually your class began to see, you got through high school, going through high school and into this magnificent university, that things were different now, very different now in this world of ours. The Soviet Union will never go back together again. Eastern Europeans, in my view, are going to remain free. And in spite of India's unfortunate action just this week, the world no longer has to worry about a superpower war, a nuclear Armageddon. And sure, dangers remain. Today, everyone says to me, well, why do we need to be strong? Who is the enemy? Well, the enemies are international terror, they're fundamentalism, people killing people in the name of God, the spread of weapons of mass destruction, and all these and more explain why the U.S. must stay involved in the world and why we must lead. And today there's a strange coalition at work in Washington and across the country, consisting of people on the political right and the political left coming together to keep us from staying involved. Big labor and liberal Democrats joining some Republicans on the right in calling for America to come home, that we've done our part and it's time for others to do the heavy lifting on international leadership. And we must not listen to that siren's call of protection and isolation, and we must not neglect Asia. We must tend to the most important bilateral relationship in the world, incidentally, and that's the United States-China relationship, not by bashing China, but by heeding the advice given just this last week of the Dalai Lama, who has huge differences with Beijing, and dissident Wang, the man that stood in front of the tanks in Tiananmen Square, both say that we ought to work closely with China, not cut off relations with China, work closely with China, and try to effect change in that manner. The point is, we must treat great nations with respect, while never yielding one inch on our fundamental beliefs on human rights or whatever else the subject. As we move into the next millennium, this great class has a shot at a world that is far more peaceful and much more prosperous and much freer and much more democratic than the class of 1898 or the class of 1948. And to be sure, our society will have ills to battle, such as these great domestic problems that plague us, teenage pregnancy, drugs, broken homes, gang violence, illiteracy, filthy entertainment, racial prejudice, all of these things will continue to plague us. But the world you enter is far from perfect. But I believe it's you're blessed because it will be more democratic, and I think there'll be far less risk of the kind of confrontations that previous generations faced. Great professors have given you a great education, and you ought to be counting your blessings. I know you don't like them all, but nevertheless, you ought to be counting your blessings for how lucky you are. You've been blessed to forge friendships that will last a lifetime, and until your 50th reunion, when you come back here, and beyond that, too. Most of all, you've been blessed by the abiding love of parents, which has guided you. You're blessed by the values that they've taught you, which will sustain you through success and defeat alike. You've been given all this and more. So my question is, what are you going to do with your life? Will you constantly gripe and complain when things go wrong? Will you be selfish and say, why me? Or if it feels good, do it. Or will you roll up your sleeves and get involved and put something back? Will you strive to lift someone up and help others all the while giving credit to someone else? Will you say politics is lousy as you sit whining on the sidelines? Or will you serve society and serve your country? I have a wonderful feeling that you will appreciate what you've been given at this great university and that you will charge out of here setting big goals, achieving great ends. In your own way, I also hope that you will find a way to be one of a thousand points of light, because your country needs you and your country's counting on you. May God bless each and every one of you as you leave this wonderful university. Thank you very, very much.